and welcome to episode 20 of Tea in the Treetops podcast.
This is the official podcast of the Tea in the Treetops book review blog. I'm Philippa and with me is Angela.
Hi.
And today is Wednesday, February 4th.
Yes, it's great that it's the 20th episode today because it also, this episode is dedicated to the 20th anniversary of the publishing of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I feel old when you say it's 20 years old.
1995 was 20 years ago. How old do you feel now, hey? So they're celebrating it. Bloomsbury Publishers are having Harry Potter Book Night tomorrow, February 5th. And we are going to have a Harry Potter extravaganza today to celebrate our love of Harry Potter.
Yes.
Not him personally, but, you know, the books.
The series.
So we'll get stuck straight into that. And then after that, we'll have to talk about what we've been reading today in the last couple of weeks. But so Harry Potter. I have to say that thank you very much to everybody who joined in with our survey. We've had a survey out for the last few days. It was a bit last minute, so it's only been a few days worth of collecting, but we put together a survey to collect some people's reading experiences of Harry Potter, and we had 50 people take the survey, so we got some stuff to talk about. Thank you very much to everyone who did it, and for those people who helped promote it, retweeted, and generally shared it on Facebook and that sort of thing. So Harry Potter, there are 7 books. They were published over, 1995 is the first one. The last one came out in 2007, I believe.
That sounds about right. 2006 maybe? I don't know.
No, it was because I was in the US.
Okay, all right.
When it came out, because I was there and I bought it in New York.
And you probably had to have been living under a rock if you haven't heard of Harry Potter by now.
Well, we did have one person in our survey who hadn't read the books.
Why did they complete the survey?
Well, I did say that there was an option there on the first question to say none, but I don't know. It's a strange thing to do if you haven't read it. Maybe they'd seen the films. I don't know.
No, maybe.
So, yeah, came out in 1995. Their first movie came out in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And, from a dodgy, possibly dodgy Pinterest thing that I found, there are now over 450 million copies in print of the Harry Potter books all around the world.
A lot of Harry Potter books.
Yes. So it's much loved all over the world, and we just thought we'd collect a bit of information about how people love to read them.
So just a word of warning, we're assuming that you've read these books if you're celebrating Harry Potter like us. So if you haven't and you plan on it, you probably want to turn off because there are definitely spoilers.
Yeah, we're
not even going to try and dodge past spoilers. No. It's being discussed in detail.
So there are a few people who did take the... the first question was, how many books have you read? There were a couple of people who hadn't read all of them. So especially if you haven't read the last probably two books.
If you started reading this series and you stopped, you deserve to slap yourself around the head. Seriously.
Well, anyway, we're going to have spoilers, so you've been warned. We just said the first question, how many Harry Potter books have you read? Most people had read all of them.
Which you would expect, completing a Harry Potter survey.
Exactly. And the second question, have you reread any of them? Over 50% of the respondents had read all of them multiple times.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, I'm going to sort of admit myself, I'm going to admit something here, and I probably sound really weird, but I have read them all multiple times.
Yeah.
But since having children, I have refused to reread them, and I don't plan on rereading them again until I can read them out loud to my kids.
Oh,
because I'm hoping that there's going to be enough years that it's blurred enough that I can almost feel like a Harry Potter virgin again. That's what I'm hoping. Yep. I want to really be able to embrace it.
Actually, I did that with just before the final movie came out.
Oh, yes.
Because I thought, when I saw the first part of Deathly Hallows, this is skipping ahead because we're going to talk about the movies later, but when I saw the first part of Deathly Hallows, I realised it had been so long since I'd read the book that I couldn't really remember what was going to happen.
Yep.
And so I refused to read it. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go back and have another look at it. Because I don't want to be spoiled for the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I didn't because I didn't remember that all the stuff that happens with Snape and all that stuff at the end. I didn't remember any of that. So it affected me much more when I saw it on the, in the movie.
It was also a well-done movie. But yes, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay. So question three. Which Hogwarts house do you identify with?
I'm going to guess. Sorry, I haven't seen the results.
No.
I'm guessing most people are going to say Gryffindor.
Yeah. Yep. You're
right.
And
I'm going to say very few people said Slytherin.
Well, you're right. It was very close. No, Slytherin's not the last.
Okay.
Gryffindor was the winner. Well, the winner, the most votes. They had 34%, but Ravenclaw had 32%. So it was actually pretty close.
See, I would have said I felt closest to Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. I don't know why. Maybe it's because most book lovers see themselves as above average intelligence.
I don't know. Well, Ravenclaws are bookish kind of people, aren't they? Like
smart people. Yes.
That's right, and studious. So Slytherin had 20%,
which
wasn't
amazed.
Too far behind.
I'm amazed.
And Hufflepuff only 12.
It was the least talked about house, though. Except for Cedric Diggory. Hufflepuff was pretty much a...
Wasn't he Gryffindor?
No, Cedric Diggory was Hufflepuff, the only good thing to ever come out of Hufflepuff, remember? That's what people were saying.
Okay.
That's why they were all so angry with Harry for having his name drawn out of the...
Oh, right, okay. It's
because
been too long since I've read that.
Stealing Hufflepuff thunder.
See, I do remember.
I know, this is what I mean. It's going to be very hard to completely forget. I have a good memory for, sadly, things that aren't that actually important and relevant to everyday life.
Yes. So we had, then we had one person who said they'd rather be a teacher, and no one said that they were a muggle.
Who would want to be a muggle when you could do magic?
I know, exactly.
And go to Hogwarts, like, really?
Yeah, definitely. Well, when I did the join the Pottermore thing and I got sorted into Gryffindor, I was like, yeah.
I was a Ravenclaw.
Because I always loved Gryffindor.
I was sorted into Ravenclaw.
Oh, okay.
Which is okay, because once I did it and then I had to go back and alter it, I was sorted into Slytherin.
Oh, really?
don't ever repeat that. Everyone forget that. Sorry.
There's nothing wrong with Slytherin.
Except for the fact that everybody that practices dark magic and death are from Slytherin. Anyway, there wasn't a witch or wizard who didn't turn bad that wasn't from Slytherin.
Really?
Ron Weasley's
quote. That seems a bit sort of... I don't know, a bit too obvious. Like,
well, it is Charles' book. Let's be real here.
Anyway, all right.
Okay.
It's not real life. Remember, Annie, it's not real life.
That's right. We wish. We could wish.
Question four. Which character is your favourite?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Someone wrote a comment saying this is like choosing a favourite limb.
I agree with that.
Because, there's too many characters and they're all gorgeous, but a lot of people put multiple down.
Yes,
so
fair enough.
Obviously, the standout winner was Hermione.
Yes, that's probably one of my favourites.
I love Hermione. And someone wrote a comment saying, let's be honest, if it wasn't for her, Harry would have been dead in the first book.
Probably. And the third book, they would never have managed to get everything all right without her time turner.
Pretty much every book she's the one who solves all the problems. So if it wasn't for her, then...
Yes,
everything would have gone badly.
Yeah.
Luna made a surprise number two.
People like the quirkiness.
Everyone loves Luna.
Mm. I wasn't the biggest Luna fan, I have to admit.
Yeah, I don't know. There's probably others
I didn't mind
like more,
her.
But I do like her.
Yeah, I'm surprised, just looking at this list, Ginny had very few votes. Because Ginny, I felt in the movies, was just a nothing character. And much as that little girl was sweet, she was such a bland actress. I don't know if she was a bland actress or she just wasn't given much of a choice.
Yeah, I think she was
either. I don't know. But I felt that Ginny, while yes, in the first couple of books was a bit of a nothing character, I really felt that she came into her own. And Neville came into his own too.
Yes, definitely.
Again, another person that surprised me, he's a bit lower on the list. Higher than Ginny, but...
Yeah,
still
so
not high.
I will probably publish these results on the post, I think. So if you want to see them, they'll be there. But nobody said Dumbledore as their favourite.
Okay.
But Professor McGonagall came up as number eight.
Total boss, boss witch.
Someone wrote she was total boss witch.
Yep.
And Snape also had eight votes. So, the teachers are coming in strongly there, and Harry and Ron only come under them with six votes each. So
do you think this is mainly because if you have a look out of the top five, three of them are girl characters?
Most
people
do
a lot of
the top,
but it's a lot of women, let's be real, that read
I don't know. There's a lot of guys who.
But I would say the people that are probably filling in this survey.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because our demographic is sort of 20 plus women. I would say that's probably partly why characters like Hermione and Luna are who are identified with.
Yes.
Quirky, smart females.
I didn't ask that on the thing, but
yeah. Anyway.
Chances are that the vast majority were actually women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, other ones entries were like Sirius, Fred and George, Lupin, Bellatrix Lestrange, which I don't know why that would be anyone's favourite character. Had more than Tonks.
So I'm like, if you were going to have a low-level sort of, you know, third-tier character.
Ginny, yeah, Tonks, Hagrid, Molly Weasley, Dobby.
God, I could not stand, sorry, the whole elf
thing. Oh, really?
Thing. The elf thing was not my favourite storyline of Harry Potter.
Oh, okay. I thought it added an extra level of quirkiness to the whole thing.
Look, it did come into play later, but like in book two, which is my least favourite Harry Potter, I just did not like the whole Dobby storyline and the whole... Was it book two or was it later on where Hermione creates the...
Spew.
The group, yeah. Spew. Might be fourth book for that.
Yeah, I think it's a middle one.
Yeah, it's not two. Two's where it starts off. Okay, anyway.
And then... Yeah, Mad Eye was someone's favourite.
I quite like Sirius and Lupin. And, I don't know. I thought they were quite interesting characters. I always wish she was going to go back and write a prequel from when his parents and
The Marauders.
And the Marauders.
There's actually a load of fan fiction and fan art with them in it.
Okay. Because I thought they were very well-created characters to just be left behind at the end of this series.
Yeah, they were well-formed. They had their own history. That was an interesting exercise. But the next question was, which character's death hit you the hardest?
Oh, my goodness. That is a hard question.
Lots of people were saying, how can you ask this question?
How can you choose one?
Yeah, because, spoiler alert, there are... 12 votes for Sirius. See, Sirius was a pretty major kind of... one of the first major deaths.
Yeah, I was devastated when Sirius died. I was pretty upset.
Considering that Harry was, you know, finally found somebody who was his family kind of thing. Yeah. And then to have it taken away was
And to have him finally, after being rotting in that horrible prison for all that time... And if you think about it, it's funny because book three to me was when I realised I didn't just like this series. I was seriously addicted to this series because I found myself, I don't know what anybody else is like. Look, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I'm just cold. That's why I've got goosebumps.
But when I'm really liking something, especially in a climactic part, I can't help myself. I start reading too fast and I'm skimming and I have to go back.
I do that too,
And
yeah,
when they're all going back in time and they're trying to rescue them and, you know, it was just... I was just like, this is the most well-planned, because what really impacted me then was when I realised she hadn't just been writing standalone books. She had had this plan from the beginning, because first chapter of book one, like the motorcycle, and Hagrid talks about Sirius lent it to him. Yeah. And like she had this plan from the beginning, and I just am like, wow. Sirius impacted me, but I wouldn't have said he was my most... impacting the series.
It was pretty bad. The film actually I thought was a very powerful scene, like in that.
Yep.
And I do remember reading in the book actually getting to that part and not wanting to read what was coming up because I knew something horrible was going to happen. But the next person on the number two is Fred Weasley.
And that probably
with 10 votes. And that his death in the books and in the movies was very hard.
And I think it's partly because, you know, yes, he's not one of the major characters, but he's so young.
And his death affects the main characters a lot. Much. Not a lot more, but
and
a lot.
The guilt that they feel that it will have. Like, you know, it just seems like such a wasted life. I think that was why that one was so... Like, Dumbledore and Sirius, they've been doing this and they've been involved with this overall fight against... baddies for so long. You kind of feel that they were noble deaths that were needed, if you know what I mean. But Fred was really, it just seemed like such a waste of a life. He was so young in comparison. That one really
very sad. I think Fred's probably one of my top ones for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dumbledore came in third. We had Dobby, who was, I think Dobby's death in the movie was a lot more, well, I don't know, it's been a long time since I read the books, so I can't say, but yeah, his death in the movie was very sad. Snape number five.
Snape's probably the other one that to me was, I think that's a really impacting death.
It was, yeah.
Because you realise how much everything he's done.
When he's died, at his point of death, that's when we find out the truth. So that's a major impact.
And he's always known, and like how long he knew that it was going to be turning out sort of the way it did was just so...
Yep.
Yeah.
So
getting goosebumps thinking there was about all these big moments. How am I going to last like another 3 years before I get to read these books again?
I know. Well, hopefully this isn't going to, you know, you're going to go it's home and just me, grab the book.
I know. It's making me think.
Well,
maybe
you know, Harry Potter book night is tomorrow night.
I might have to do another movie rewatch. Oh, I don't feel that that's cheating.
So the other ones in the list that people put in were Lupin and Tonks, which was another really sad.
Did Lupin and Tonks have a child?
They did, yeah. Oh. Which in the movie, you don't know.
Okay, all right.
You knew that she was pregnant, I think, in the movie.
See, that devastates me too.
They had the boy whose name was Teddy, and you don't, in the movie, they don't really mention anything about him. And then in the book, it was really sad because they left him behind when they went to the battle, and then they both died, and it's like, that kid is now, her parents. We're looking after.
Oh.
But, oh, very sad.
Is that because we're mums?
I think so, yeah.
I also really like Lupin as a character because I thought he was one of the first people that really showed Harry a lot of kindness. Like Dumbledore, yes, I guess did, but not the same way, not in that father figure way.
Right. And I also love David Thewlis, so that helps.
Yes.
But anyway, Hedwig is next on the list.
I didn't realise Hedwig died.
Oh no, I'm spoiling it for you.
No, we said there were spoilers.
When he finally leaves his aunt and uncle's house for the last time and they have the Polyjuice potion and they're all flying on the brooms to get away from there.
Hedwig gets killed.
Oh, you didn't remember that?
I couldn't remember that. I'm assuming it was a very noble death. Is this when George loses an ear or
remember,
something too?
Yeah. All I can remember is the movie. So I don't know. I can't remember whether it's different in the books. But yes, Hedwig takes one for the team.
Oh.
And very sad, that one. But not as bad as, I don't think as bad as the others. Harry's mum is next. We don't actually really see Harry's mum's death except in the flashbacks from
Look, I would say Sirius. It's very sad that he lost his mum. Because it shapes him who he is, but I don't say it hit me hard because you never had a personal relationship
with
her. That's
right, and it didn't actually really hit me hard until the movie at the end of the Deathly Hallows when you're having Snape's flashback. And as a mum, seeing the little baby, Harry, in the cot, like crying because his mum's just been killed. I was like,
that's sad.
Oh my God.
When in book four at the end, when they first find out that their wands, like his and Voldemort's wands, repel each other sort of thing.
Yeah.
And all of the last people that were killed with Voldemort's wand come and cheer him on. So that's his parents and stuff. That's quite sad too.
Yeah, all the times when his parents appear to him are always pretty bittersweet. and the last one that someone put in was Cedric because they'd only read the first four books and Cedric's the only person to have died in the first four books.
No, Sirius died. Oh, no. Sirius dies later. Five.
Of, yeah.
Yeah, prisoner. Sorry. He's hidden, but he's still around.
Order of Phoenix. Yeah.
Okay. So well, yeah, that's true.
You've
and that
got
is
so
pretty...
much pain ahead of you. I'm sorry.
But it's good pain. It's good.
It's good. Keep going. But I'm just saying, Cedric is just the beginning. Actually, I remember when I read it that I was shocked that Cedric had died because
it's
a kid's book. People don't die.
But it changes from a children's series to a middle grade series.
Suddenly
it
became a lot darker. And from then on, things got extremely dark.
Yeah.
So, lots of deaths in this series. But it's, some of them sadder than others. But all right. Molly Weasley. Badass mother or overprotective helicopter mum. So we had...
she's not a helicopter 83%. Mum. She's not a helicopter. If she's a helicopter mum, I don't know what that makes the rest of us poor mothers on earth. Like,
83% overwhelmingly said that she was a BAMF. And someone wrote a comment saying, knitted sweater wearing echidna with your choice of menopausal honey or cyanide tipped spikes.
There you go.
Of it. And other people said... both. To be honest, I could never be sure whether I loved her or hated her. And someone else wrote, strong woman doing her best for her family and friends.
I think considering the sacrifices she had to make, really, like she had to be pretty... I really liked her. She, A, took Harry in, basically, and treated him like a son. So he had a family like he never had. She would have taken him in full time, except for the fact that Dumbledore, you know, there were things that were keeping him going back to that horrible, horrible house of the Dudleys of the world.
Yes.
But she would have easily taken him in. Like, I don't know. I thought, I quite liked her. I thought she was a really good... She was a really inspiring person. Yes, she was a bit annoying, but let's be real, all mums can be a bit annoying. But she was still pretty hands-off, really. She still let them be the people they needed to become.
And she wasn't afraid to get stuck in when people were threatened.
Oh, definitely.
And that's why...
Her family were everything to her.
Badass.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bit of an extra question that I chucked in because I thought... It'd be funny. So number seven, which characters do you love to hate? Character or characters? Probably unsurprisingly, Draco Malfoy is the top of this.
The next one I think is the strongest character.
Mine definitely, Dolores Umbridge is like my number one. She came in number two actually in the votes, but while Draco's the baddie obviously in the story, I did think he was a bit of a misunderstood baddie, as in he was just doing what his parents had, you know, taught him to do.
Mm.
And by the end, he was actually kind of not wanting to take part in it anymore.
I didn't mind Draco Malfoy. Yes, the first couple of books, he was a bit annoying.
Yep.
But he was really, he was trying to be good. Yeah. Like, he was. Yeah. He didn't want to be bad.
Yeah, by sort of the fifth or sixth book, he was regretting... his actions, I think. He didn't want to be... He wanted to be accepted by
Voldemort, obviously. The next person just has no empathy in their body. And it's just everything creepy.
Someone put a comment saying, I wanted her dead more than Voldemort.
I feel that Dolores Umbridge is up there with the... I'm crossing books and genres here.
Yeah.
But she's up there with the Joffreys of the world. I reckon Joffrey's got to be one of the most... love to hate characters ever.
Yes.
I'd love to know how many people have Google searched, when does Joffrey die? Like, please tell me Joffrey died. I know I Google searched that. I had to know. That was the one spoiler and I surely created. Surely there
can't be anybody except possibly for the guy who plays him, who I can't think of his name.
I feel so sorry for him. He'd better be a really good noble character. Who did not cheer
when they read the bit that when he was dying.
Yeah, probably.
But,
so she was just terrible.
Umbridge, I hated her. Horrible Skeeter. Toad lady, someone wrote. They didn't even write her name. They just wrote horrible toad lady.
But the whole cats on the walls and stuff, there was something just wrong about her.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, the way the writing on the, like, the writing out the lines that got etched into your hands, like, that, surely that should have been taken up above her and the Ministry of Magic should have seen that as a
torture. Torturing children.
You don't torture children.
But no one found out about that.
Yeah, but like, why? No, that made me annoyed with Harry too for not saying something.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway. But when you've got someone in a position of power doing that, like, who do you go to? Like, but he didn't even say anything to Dumbledore. Like,
I know he should have said that. But anyway, he didn't. I couldn't stand Rita Skeeter. She annoyed me a lot.
Yes. She's like the epitome of the media in the real world.
Yeah, that's right. But she'd be the door knocking, the deaf door knocking lady. Yeah. She was a real journo. Yeah.
Bellatrix Lestrange actually came in at number three, and for good reason. I mean, she's like the
deputy to the big baddie. I think
she was excellent character in that. Yeah, she was a sort of over the top cartoon baddie.
I think she had a lot of depth to her. I think one of my favorite scenes is when after Sirius dies and Harry challenges her.
Yep.
And he has that moment of weakness where he tries to kill her with Avada Kedavra.
I should
know this. But he doesn't have the hate behind him to follow it through, and she explains to him that you have to really want it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to actually have a lot of hate in you to be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was a really, really... Something about that was just a really powerful scene. I
remember that. I need to read the books again. The details like that get lost in the movie. See, they didn't really put them all.
Things like that are things that I just think of what make the series really... I often feel when I read books, so things that to me are really powerful aren't necessarily what other people notice. Mm. Anyway, that's one of, for me, a really big thing.
That's what makes you a good reviewer.
Hmm. So I liked that. I quite liked. I didn't love to hate her. I just thought she was a great baddie.
Yep.
Mm.
So number four was Snape. So everyone loves to hate Snape until the very end, of course.
But he got so boring. He knew that they wouldn't have all their issues with each other. Like, I don't know. I found it sort of like, yeah, let's move on from that. Like, and I know it was needed, but...
I thought that it was interesting that you never were sure of him. Like, sometimes he was on the bad side, and sometimes he was doing the things that Dumbledore wanted him to do, and then you get snatches of the agreement that he made with Dumbledore, and then... You know, you're never sure what he's actually, prince, where his loyalties lie. And you were like, does that make him
bad or not? And yeah,
so that was a very well-kept secret, I think, right until the end of the story. I didn't guess any of that. Lucius Malfoy, obviously everyone loves to hate him because he's a bit of an ass.
He is just a dickhead, let's be real.
Yep.
We don't have like a G rating or anything on the podcast.
We do, but I can bleep things out. That's okay. I think you're allowed to say that.
Okay.
And surprisingly, Voldemort is quite far down the list.
That's because you know he's the baddie. He's not the...
Yeah.
He's a baddie, but he's the big overarching baddie, so he's not the love-to-hate one.
I don't know.
Joffrey's not the real baddie, I guess, in Game of Thrones, but everybody loves to hate him.
Oh, he's the real baddie.
I'm sorry, he's bad, but there are other people doing just as bad things. Yeah, that's
true. He's the obvious baddie. I guess Voldemort's the big bad who made everything possible, so I don't know. The other mentions were Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, yeah, he was just annoying.
Yeah, but kind of strangely adorable in as well, I thought.
In a really annoying way,
Cornelius Fudge, who was just a...
He was an idiot. Yeah. He was a bad guy. Yeah, just a victim of the times. He didn't think he was a bad guy. He was like the Tony Abbott of the... of the Harry Potter world. My apologies to anybody that's not from Australia reading this. No, sorry, not the Tony Abbott. Sorry, this is even worse.
Sorry, that's great.
He's a Campbell Newman.
Really?
Well, he's a Campbell Newman. It's just the same. Cares more about the politics and the deals he can make for his mates than actually doing anything. No, you know, Tony Abbott was a better example.
Tony Abbott's more of...
Campbell Newman actually did stuff. That was bad. Tony Abbott just says, it's not me, it's you.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, that's politics aside. We also had Lavender Brown.
She was just annoying.
Peter Pettigrew, who also was...
Oh, yep.
A sort of typical baddie who you wanted to be.
He was a big betrayer, though. You wanted him to be goody, but he wasn't. Yeah.
And Crabbe and Goyle.
The idiots.
Yeah, they were just followers. So, I don't know. I didn't love them. I didn't hate them.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum, those two.
They were good comedy value. Mm. Right. We'll leave the politics behind and talk about... the last question was, tell us what Harry Potter means to you. So there was a huge range of answers here. People saying that they had read the books when they were like 8 or 9. They'd had them read to them at school. Their parents or their siblings had read them to them. Mm-hmm. Everybody basically gushing about what a wonderful part of their lives it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read out a few of the comments. We had once someone said, I grew up reading Harry Potter and the world was so magical. I spent hours making up my own adventures in that magical world, and I still dream my Hogwarts letter will turn up eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else said, I read the first book after the first film came out, and I remember waiting for the later books to come out with excitement. I think the humour and detail in the books is lost in the films, but I enjoy them anyway as something separate, which is a very good point.
Yep.
this is a very long comment, but
I'll try and assure you.
Harry Potter is a wonderful, delightful, powerful story in a rich, vibrant, fascinating world. I picked up the series just before Prisoner of Azkaban, which is my favourite book in the series, When I was 18 or 19, I spent most of my 20s involved in the Harry Potter fandom and made some good friends there. For about 5 years, I had a Harry Potter fan art website. I made chapter-by-chapter set of illustrations for the first 6 books and various other miscellaneous pieces of Harry Potter-themed art. Whoever wrote this, I know I didn't get anyone to write their names down, but I would love to see that.
Yeah.
can you please write a comment and tell us what it is, because it sounds awesome. I've read most of the books more than once, except for the 7th. I only ever managed to read that one once and never got a set of chapter illustrations made for it. It's not that it was a terrible book or that I disliked the way it finished, just my life was changing. I was already drifting out of the fandom, and it was released 3 weeks after I got married. I didn't go to the release party, blah, blah, blah. A month after that, my husband got me into World of Warcraft and my fanish focus switched over.
We'd like to see any World of Warcraft art you've got going for you.
Yeah, so I'm assuming this is one of our friends from WoW-based Twitter or something. So whoever it is, tell us. We'd love to see it. Mm. I should have had an option to put your name down if you wanted to.
I'm going to take a stab at it's Vidalia.
Maybe. I don't know.
She does a lot of World of Warcraft art.
Yeah.
So maybe. I don't know. I could be completely wrong on that one. It's been a while since I've been on the World of Warcraft blogging community as well.
Yes. So thank you very much for that long and wonderful comment.
We want more information. That's all we can say.
I don't know about the fan fiction stuff, but if you're interested in fan art, I've got a Pinterest board where I've pinned a whole lot of it.
Nice.
So I'll put a link to it in the notes. Because I love the pictures of, the Marauders, basically, James and Lily and that, and just random other stuff. There's a lot of Harry, Ginny kind of stuff on there. Okay, I'll link that, so check it out. So other comments included, Harry Potter is an irreplaceable part of my childhood. I remember my elder sister reading me The Philosopher's Stone as a bedtime story. It was only logical I became a devotee to everything Harry Potter related. And it holds many nostalgic memories. And someone else has put, Harry Potter is something that we all enjoy as a family and we talk about together and experience over and over again together.
See, that's what I want for when my girls get older.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm looking forward to being able to read.
I just think for a children's story, you can really, there's so much analysis and so many different layers you can peel. And every time you read it, you get something else out of it. I just think it's just a great book, and I'm not saying there aren't other great series and stories out there, but I just think this is one that so many people have read, and I think, you know, all of us who read this in our 20s are going to be reading it to our children, like, you know, and all the people that read it when they were kids are going to want to pass it on to their children. I just think it is just one of those series that's going to be timeless. It's just beautiful.
So when did you first read it?
I got into it. I had sort of vaguely heard about it. One of my best friends, Zara, whose son is the same age as my daughter. Anyway, that's a side story. She has a younger brother who was like 10 years younger than her.
Okay.
So when we were 18, he was like 10. And I was over at her place once. He was talking about muggles. I was like, what language are you talking? This is something weird. And Zara was like, oh, we've been reading Harry Potter to him. He really likes Harry Potter. This is when there were 4 books.
Yep.
And after a while, she was just like, I'm going to lend you the books. I'm just going to lend you the books. You can read it for yourself. And I think it took another about 6 months until I actually did get those books.
Yeah.
And then I started reading them. And yeah, book one was good. Book two was good. Book three, as I said, I was, when we were in the whole time turning element, I was just like, this series is awesome. That moment I realized Sirius was linking back to book one and there was this huge grand plan, I was like, I'm hooked, give me more. And then I had to sit there and wait with everybody else after book 4, because I don't know if JK Rowling had writer's block or whatever, but there was a huge wait for book 5, and I was one of those people that lined up and pre-ordered my book and, you know, all the rest of it at that point.
Just want to look up when
there was a big gap between book 4 and book 5, and I didn't wait as long as everybody else. Like, it was already in paperback when I read book 4.
So book 4 came out 2000 and book 3 was only 1999.
Well, I think I read them in 2000. I must have read them in 2000 because
I still lived in my...
Book five was 2003, so there was a few years.
Yeah, so I read... I know it must have been 2000 because I was still in my uni student pad, which was Mission Brown and Revolting. It's disgusting. Well, we moved out in 2001, the beginning of 2001, to our nicer young professional place. So I must have been...
I had it in my head that I'd started reading it after the first movie came out in 2001, but I can't have because I distinctly remember hearing the theme music in the first movie, like when I was sitting there in the cinema and thinking, yes, this is...
They got
this
it perfect.
This is Hogwarts, it was great. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is later, I loved the first movie so much and I, you know, subsequent movies really loved it, but... Going back and watching the first movie now, it's terrible.
The first two movies are terrible. It's really I'm sorry. Bad. Is it Chris Columbus that did them? I don't know. The end of movie two was actually embarrassing with this big loving hug thing with Hagrid and this. Yeah, I'm just like, oh, I'm going to vomit.
It's like, no, this is wrong.
I'm really glad they changed directors.
And as they went on, they did get more darker. Yeah.
My biggest problem with the movie... Sorry, we've moved on to the movies now.
That's okay. We can do that.
My biggest problem with the movies is book three, which is my absolute favourite book. The movie, the director... Look, don't get me wrong. He did a good job of it, but he changed this where it was filmed. Now, I might not have liked the way the actors were directed in the first two movies, but I thought they got actual Hogwarts and the scenery.
Yes.
Perfect.
And the
music. I was devastated when we went to the world again in movie three because, to me, they changed it and they didn't change it for the better. They changed it for the worse.
Oh, okay.
So, look, I've rewatched the movie since then and I haven't got that full feeling of devastation that I did that first time. But I still think that the way it was filmed from an artistic perspective was smack bang first two movies. And, look, movies four, five and the two parts of six, David Yates... four, five, six and the two parts of seven. David Yates, who I'm pretty sure is a director for all of them, I think he actually did he got a really good balance of the two.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I know a lot of people really booed all of the Harry Potter movies, and things got cut, but I actually think he was, to me, he did a great job with the content.
The the two parts of Deathly Hallows were really great.
Yes, it actually was needed to be cut in two,
even though they still cut a fair bit out of those movies, but a lot of the book was flashbacks and stuff, and you can't really do that so easily in a movie. So I think the parts they cut were, they weren't missed in the story.
I thought he did the Goblet of Fire brilliantly. Like when you actually got to see the Quidditch match and everything. Because let's be real, Quidditch was pretty much cut from the movies. It was pretty much cut from the end books, which it needed to be, because let's be real, who had time to play Quidditch when they were killing bad guys?
I love the bits of with school life, actually, that kind of just
you
general
needed those
school
glimmers,
life.
But you needed like those glimmers of sort of normalcy.
Yeah, especially once you get up to like book five and six where stuff is going down.
Yeah, that's right. And even book seven, even though they're not in school, but, you know, the others are still back at school.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually think he did a really good job. Yep. Of them. So, yeah, three, which was actually my biggest disappointment movie, though, because that's my favourite book, and I just will never get over that first time I watched it and that punch to the gut when I was like, this is not how I imagined Hogwarts, and I think you really ruined it.
All right, I'm going to have to watch this movie now and see if I agree with
The you. Marauder's Map, though, was brilliantly done.
The props in general are really amazing, just all the little magical things that, and the effects, like the spell effects and that kind of thing, just really bring it all alive.
Mm.
So it only intensified the enjoyment I got out of reading the books then. Just going back quickly to the books. I had read at least one, possibly three or four by that stage. Then I moved to the UK for 5 years. And over there, obviously, because it comes from there, it's like massive, like
really
massive.
Did you
really
do a tour
massive.
Of the castles and things while you were over there?
I don't think... No, well, it's
they
not,
hadn't started doing that sort of movie
Hogwarts
tour thing.
Hogwarts is not a real place.
No, but you could do Harry Potter tours.
Oh.
You could go on a Harry Potter tour. They advertised it over here about the Harry Potter tours you could do.
Oh, okay. Well, oh, I'm really sorry. They now have.
It's like you can go do a Lord of the Rings tour of all the places that it was filmed.
Oh, well, anyway, maybe we weren't that sort of into that sort of thing then. We did other stuff like going to Europe and whatever instead of literary tours. I did visit a lot of castles.
Yes.
Castles are like my favourite thing to visit. But anyway. That over there it's really massive. So when the book came out, the books did come out while we were over there and I did read them. But when the films came out, I remember we all got together with our friends from work and went on opening night, like booked out this entire row of the cinema so that we could watch it. And that was before it was in 3D, so we were just sitting right in the front row. And actually, speaking of 3D, we went to see, what was it? I can't remember. This is when we were in Melbourne, I think, one time, my husband and I, and we were watching The Deathly Hallows.
Yeah.
Deathly Hallows, maybe it was number 6, 2005. No, it must have been the first part of Deathly Hallows. It was when 3D movies were first coming out.
Hmm.
So they had the first 10 minutes or so, or 15 minutes of the movie was in 3D.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was like one of the first times I'd ever seen 3D
cinema. I never saw any of them in 3D.
Well, only the last one came out in 3D, the very last one.
We had Caitlin and Matthew then, right?
Yes. I was in Melbourne and I was pregnant, so you're right. It wasn't. The first 15 minutes of the movie was in 3D and we had the glasses and everything. And it was fantastic. And it was like being there, standing there on the street with Dumbledore and Harry at the beginning when they first meet
this is Deathly Hallows. Is this when they go in to find the
when he's in the teacher Horcruxes guy? No. That teacher guy who's collects everywhere. Slughorn. Professor Slughorn. Yes, they go in there in the house. And they're standing there in front of the house and it's like you're standing in the street in the village. It's in 3D. My mind was blown. I mean, now obviously 3D movies, whatever. But then it was like,
I never choose to go see a movie in 3D. I will always choose to see it in 2D.
Oh, I love 3D movies. But anyway, that long story short, it wasn't actually all 3D. It was just a promo. And it finished. And the whole cinema goes, oh. Because we have to take the glasses off and watch the rest of it in 2D.
Oh, that's a bit sad.
Anyway. Yep. And I think that I would choose for my children to read the books before they see the films, just because the films are kind of scary. The further on you go, and in a book it's easier to sort of...
But there's also, I think, things that I think are really important about friendship and bravery that are kind of having to be missed when it comes to the movies. I don't know, like, a lot of the Neville and the Ginny and the Luna and, you know, they Neville is a huge character, really, in book 5+.
Yeah.
At the end of book 5+, and that's really dulled down. And
he doesn't get much of a go in
the movies. And some of the things that I loved, like, I don't know, I just think at the essence of Harry Potter is friendship and bravery can, you know, overcome all odds, and you don't have to be, you can be scared, but if you have the right people with you, do you know what I mean? You can overcome things. I don't know. That's my philosophy for the dad.
Yeah, you're right. And I think actually while I was reread them in 2013, and as I was reading it, I kept thinking, why don't they just go and tell a teacher about this?
Yes.
Like, why don't they just get some help? And then I thought, no, I have to slap myself and go, no, if I was a kid reading this, I would not do that either. I'd be thinking, go and do something about it yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
But as an adult reading it, I kept thinking that. I'm like, why don't you go and ask someone for help? Like, Dumbledore is the most powerful wizard ever or whatever. If you go and get him to help you, then...
You've got the connection and everything, yeah. No.
He was frustratingly quiet all the time. But, I mean, Harry I'm talking about. But anyway, I love the fact that they just did everything as the three of them and plus others as they came along.
And they did have adults that were helping them. They really did. Yeah, like Tonks Lupin and the Order of Phoenix and...
And he did get in contact with Sirius at one point.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm going to have to rewatch the movies. I'm going to keep to my vow of not rereading the books.
Yeah.
Until my children are old enough. But I'll have to go back and reread the movies. So
if you've only seen the movies and you haven't read the books, I do recommend reading them because
definitely.
So much more happens. It's the same as I say to people, not the same, but, you know, similar. If you've only been watching Game of Thrones and you haven't read the books,
yeah.
then you should try and do that.
I'm not sold on that one, only because I've read the first two Game of Thrones and I found them horribly boring.
Well,
I'm sorry.
There are big stretches of not a lot going on. I just
found them really boring to read. Maybe they got better. I don't know. I don't know if I could sit myself through.
To the characters and the world.
But I just don't think it was written well enough to be... Oh, okay. Like, don't get me wrong, the ideas and the plots are great, but I just don't think it was written well enough to pull it off. Mm. But I think they've done a great job of the TV show of getting rid of a lot of the boring stuff and keeping a lot of the good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's another some story polish. Then.
Okay, that's okay. Another episode. Again, I said that. We'll have that discussion before season 5, Game of Thrones, starts in April.
Yeah. So, read Harry Potter. It's great.
Yes. So if you finished Harry Potter, you're not a big reader, but you loved it and you kind of like to start maybe something else.
Yep.
There's a few really good ones. I think most of these are middle grade, except for one.
Yep.
So the first one, which we did a joint review of a little while ago, is called Magisterium. Which is by...
The Iron
Trial is a series. Only book one is out so far. It's done by a huge YA, couple of huge YA authors, Cassandra Clare and Holly Black. Now, a lot of people were very anti it because they said it was too like Harry Potter. I thought, yes, it was like Harry Potter, but it still brought enough new stuff to the game that it's a worthwhile read. Very easy to read, very infectious. Definitely give it a go. So I haven't read this one, so you can give your
I was just going to mention it. The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss, which I just read recently, it's not sort of middle grade or YA, but it is a bit Harry Potter-ish in that he goes to a school where he learns magic. So
okay.
It's that kind of way. It's more adult book, but it's similar in broadly.
Yeah. And now you haven't read this next series, but again, I think this is brilliant. So this is the Percy Jackson and Heroes of Olympus series. There's two series, same world, but, you know, a different group of five books each one by Rick Riordan. Now, they are fantastic. So the difference is it's not like a magical school for witches and wizards. It's all based on Greek mythology. Yep. So and Roman mythology in the Heroes of Olympus series. So. Okay. It is just, they're just fantastic. Again, like Harry Potter, really easy to read, but there's some real depth and complexity to them. But they go to a school for, like, demigods and things like that. Yes. So it's still got that real Harry Potter vibe. Great thing about that series is there's already 10 books about it. So if you like the first one, you can just pick them all up and just read away. I love it when the series is already out when you discover it, so you can just read it all.
That's what I want to do with this one. I actually have the first one on my Kindle, but I just...
Oh, fantastic. You can wait and read them to Matthew in a few years.
Yeah.
If you wanted
to. Yeah, I will do that.
They're very good. Mm-hmm. And then the final one that I want to read, which the second book is just came out on the 27th of January, I believe. And I've spoken about this recently in another podcast, and that's the Eighth Day series by Diane K. Salerni. Now, this has got to be the most underrated series of 2014. So the Eighth Day, which is book one, came out in like April 2014, and then in January, so this last month, the second book, Inquisitor's Mark, came out. This is just a fantastic series. I don't know why it hasn't had more advertising. I think it could be a huge competitor to Harry Potter or to the Rick Riordan series. I just think kids would love it. Adults would love it. It's just fantastic. Yeah. It's all based on Arthurian legend and this whole concept that there's actually this eighth day of the week for special people.
Oh.
The main character's great. It's just a really, really interesting series. I cannot wait to see where this goes and how many books there's going to be. Totally underrated. Totally, totally underrated. I think they've only had like 500 people read them each book on like Goodreads, which to me is just devastating. It is worth picking up.
Yep.
Really worth picking up. And it's so... You'll love it if you like something like Harry Potter, but it's completely different too. It's very unique.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, I'm sure there are plenty more that we haven't remembered or haven't thought of.
Yep.
So if you have any recommendations, please feel free to send them to us. And also, if you didn't get a chance to fill in the survey, it's actually still open because I haven't worked out how to close it, but that's another story. please write us an email, or like our email address is contact@teaandthetreetops.com, or you can write a comment on the post. Tell us all about what Harry Potter means to you, and if you want to get involved in Harry Potter book night, which is tomorrow night, the 5th of February.
And let's be real, this is going to be posted tomorrow, so
yeah, you will be getting involved tonight, or hopefully you won't be reading it next week or something. listening to it. There's loads of events all over the world. Check your local library or bookstore.
The Bloomsbury website has a whole lot of Harry Potter book night events listed.
We did register to be part of it, so there should be a list somewhere, and you should be able to find something near you to go along to.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we should be sitting here in our you know,
this library has a thing on at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Unfortunately, we aren't.
I thought it was tomorrow.
Oh, sorry, tomorrow. Yes, on the actual book night.
Yep.
Yeah, day. So I've got my
bag with Muggle written on it, but that's all I've managed today, unfortunately. But yeah, so get involved. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all we've got to talk about Harry Potter. That was a pretty major kind of
we might have to really rush through the rest of this.
Nah, I'll be right.
Yep.
So do you want to quickly talk about what we've been reading?
Yeah.
What have you read recently?
I thought I had done a lot of reading this last fortnight. I haven't. I blame the Lumetia Chronicles, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
For that. I must have had to take a big break after the final book because I was just in awe of this series. So I think I was in the middle of Fury of the Exiles, or I just started Fury of the Exiles our last podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That book was just brilliant. It was just brilliant. I loved it, considering I didn't really like Fury in book one.
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit disappointed that he was the main voice of book two, and oh my goodness, I absolutely loved him.
Me too.
Since then I've finished that. I read straight away, I had to get my hands on a copy of Quintara of Charon, which is the final book of that trilogy, and that series was just beautiful. There were a couple of things that happened at the end which were just heartbreaking, and I did a lot of crying. My oldest daughter, because I was sitting there reading while they're eating lunch and things like that, trying to get those few bits and pieces, like, you know, just get those few more pages in while, like, any chance I could get. And she must have thought I was a bit crazy because I just all of a sudden burst into tears over things. But that is just an absolutely wonderful series. It is not middle grade. It is definitely young adult. But if you're after a good young adult series, I can't recommend that highly enough. Brilliant.
I loved it too. It's one of my favourites of all time.
Yeah. I also read a book that just came out on the 27th of January as well, called The Last Time We Say Goodbye by Cynthia Hand. Now, I've been in a bit of a contemporary phase. I know the Melina Machetta series is not contemporary, but if I look back on the books I've read this year, a large portion of them have been contemporary, which is very unlike me.
Are they all review books that you've...
Some of them are review books. Some of them haven't been review books. I loved Cynthia Hand's first series, which is the Unearthly series, which is about angels. I thought that was beautifully written. And she writes about emotions and love, and her character development is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favourite book boyfriends ever. And not everybody, and it's not one that's shared with a lot of other people, but one of my favourite book boyfriends is from her Unearthly series, and that's Tucker. But yes, so The Last Time We Say Goodbye, though, is completely different. Nothing paranormal in the slightest. Mm-hmm. It is a contemporary, and it is a high contemporary. It's about suicide, and it's about suicide within a family. So the protagonist's younger brother commits suicide, and he plans it enough that he actually basically creates all of his picture boards and everything for his funeral before shooting himself in the stomach in their garage. And that's a hard topic to read about. Yeah. It is beautifully written. It is just beautifully written. But what I will say, and I don't want to give too much away, I think you really should read it. Not a lot happens. It is really a character-driven story.
Yeah.
And it's basically from the perspective of her therapist has told her to write a journal to try and get her feelings out and to think about the first and last time she did things with her brother, not to think about the death, but like because she'd sort of blocked it out, to think about the last time she saw him smiling or happy or, the last time.
I'd be in tears the whole way through the book.
Well, you're not actually in tears the entire way through, but it builds up and you kind of get... It's beautifully character-driven. If you like a character-driven story, this is definitely worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
What really got to me, though, is I don't know if anybody else reads the author acknowledgements, but I often read the author acknowledgements and... I had a cry during the author acknowledgements when she mentioned that she starts off her acknowledgement with the fact that her younger brother committed suicide when she was a first year uni student, college student in the US. And I felt devastated for her then. Yep. And it's funny because in her first series, I really connected to the mother-daughter relationship in there, and she'd just had her baby daughter when she was writing the second book.
Okay.
And I was like...
So she's obviously very good at getting capturing those relationships in the stories.
Yes, she really is. So, even if you're not a contemporary reader or if you like to shy away from hard books, if you're willing for a challenge, I think it's really well written. And it kind of just... It doesn't... And neither did the Gail Forman one about suicide. They don't make suicide into something glamorous, which is good because it isn't.
Yep.
It kind of shows that... I'm not saying it's affected. A selfish act, but it just gives you another perspective. It gives you another perspective,
mm-hmm.
you know? And at the end of the day, you need to be able to help yourself. Even if you get support to do that, you have to... Yeah, sorry. It's a lot about guilt from the people left behind. Very, very good. So that's... Sorry, I'll go on to something maybe a little bit less depressing. What have you been reading? Hopefully nothing that deep. What have you recently read?
I have had a contemporary as well. Mm-hmm. Waiting for Doggo by Mark B. Mills is a... just came out at the end of last year. It's basically about a guy whose girlfriend just upped and left him and went, overseas without...
Okay.
Telling her where.
So she just packed up and left.
Yep, and left behind a dog, which was a rescue dog that he didn't really...
I'm sorry, I'm going to judge this imaginary character. That's a horrible thing to do to a person.
Yeah, she does sound... Well, she's like...
Selfish, selfish, selfish.
Yeah, and she's a bit of a New Age type, angels and crystals type person.
Don't have a pet then. Pets are people. They're not people, but they still...
Oh, well,
they're still, you know...
I mean, he still had... now, it's been a week since I read it, and I've forgotten the guy's name already. That's sad. Anyway, Doggo, this ugly little terrier dog who starts off being really... They just rescued it recently from Battersea Dogs Home,
mm-hmm.
Dog and Cats Home. So this is in London, obviously. They live in a flat in London. And... He's just starting a new job at an advertising agency, and it's about his new job and what's going on there, and how Doggo has to stay with him because he can't be left in the flat on his own. And so the Doggo gradually becomes part of the office furniture, basically, and becomes his mascot, basically, and helps him get through the fact that his girlfriend's left him and stuff. Yeah. So it sounds like it's sad, but it's actually very funny. It's It's got a lot of comedy, and the main character sounds like a guy that I would like to be friends with. He's really funny and kind of just makes these offhand comments that are just hilarious. So I recommend that one if you're interested in it's quite short. It's only 200 pages or something, but
and it sounds like it's adult, obviously.
Oh, yes. He does, end up sleeping with several different women through the course of the 200 pages.
Yeah.
But it's not that kind of it's hard to... categorize it like that, but anyway. So I also read I just finished last night actually Rivers of London by Ben Aronovich,
mm-hmm.
which is another London set book. It's more of a fantasy realism type book where this guy Peter is a police officer, mm-hmm. a sort of new kind of cadet police officer in the Metropolitan Police, of course, and who discovers, one night, there's been a grisly murder, and he runs into this guy who looks like he's from the 18th century. It turns out to be a ghost who tells him what happened. And he finds out that there's actually like a real supernatural kind of element to London that, and there's like ghosts and different creatures, like all sorts of different creatures. And he gets taken in by a constable, some type of police guy who's a wizard.
Mm.
And he takes him as his apprentice, basically. So now he's a wizard apprentice, a police officer who looks after all the paranormal stuff that goes on. Policing
the paranormal stuff? So is this like all the cases that the normal police can't solve actually relating to
it's the paranormal element? It's kind of like X-Files. Like there's crimes happen, they get called in.
This doesn't... I feel like I've read something else that's very similar, but I can't tell you what... It actually really reminded me
of something else that I can't put my finger on as well. I was sitting there last night going... I have read something that's really similar to this, but I couldn't think what it was. And it's great. It's really funny. Yeah. The thing that it is quite grisly, mm-hmm. because the crimes, like the murders that happen are pretty violent, like basically these people's faces explode and stuff, and because they're possessed by ghosts and stuff. And it really reminded me that a lot of the stuff that police have to deal with is really kind of gross, gruesome. And my sister-in-law is a police officer, and every now and then she tells us these stories about these car accidents and stuff, and I'm just like, how on earth do you deal with that? Like, I would not want to do that job. So in some ways it was a little bit depressing. It felt real, like, you know, mm-hmm. these real things happen, but obviously the supernatural stuff, well, as far as I know, it doesn't happen in London. Maybe it does, who knows. But the thing that really appealed to me about it is that there's this magic that he's a wizard, obviously, he can do this magic, and he's learning how to do it from his master, who, and I don't know, there's a few more books out. This was written in like 2011 maybe. So there's three of them out now, and I recommend it. It's really good, Rivers of London. It's basically a love letter to London as well. It's got all different neighbourhoods, areas in London. The reason it's called Rivers of London is because the river and the tributaries of the river are all like gods, basically. They're people who he meets.
Yeah.
So the Mother Thames is looking after the lower bit of the Thames, and then there's Old Man Thames who looks after the Thames Valley area. Yep. And all the tributaries of the Thames have got different women or whatever who look after them. And so it was a bit American Gods in that way, like allegories of the actual things are actual people and... I don't know, it's not actually anything like American Gods, but it just reminded me of that kind of gods of things that you wouldn't normally have gods associated with. So, that's kind of a bits and pieces review of that, but I will write a review at some point.
Have you started something since you just finished that last night?
Start. Onyx Javelin is by Steve Wheeler. It's like a hard sci-fi space kind of opera. I've read the first two in this series, and they're really very... detailed technological kind of sci-fi. I think I've
read your reviews.
The actual characterization I thought in the first book was a little weak, but it did get better in the second one, so I'm hoping this one will be awesome, because the actual worlds that is made and the technology involved is really pretty amazing, like unique. So I'm going to start that today.
Mm-hmm.
And have you started? Did you say you?
I have were just something? Started something. So after my daughter, one of my daughters, I don't know which, deleted my carefully compiled Excel spreadsheet of all my review books with the publication date, so I could feel a bit organized. And look, I have been away, and I've had other things happening, so I've been maybe a little bit disorganized on the whole reviewing front, other than this podcast. So anyway, I had to redo it, and I've realized I've got a couple of books that I'm now behind in the reading of, which is fine because they sound like great books, so I'm just getting to them finally.
Good.
So I've just started The Here and Now by Anne Brashears, not quite sure how to pronounce that. That just came out in January, but it was the very beginning of January, so I've literally just started that. Now, I'm pretty sure this book has a time travel element. I love time travel, so that excites me. And then I've also got another one that's about to come out on February 10th, which is called Seeker by Arwen Ellis Dayton, and I thought that one sounded really interesting too.
Yeah.
So that's probably what I'm hoping to read. There's a few others that I've also got that came out at the end of January, beginning of February, that I've got to get to as well. But but we will see. They're the first two that I plan on reading. Oh, and I just want to mention Ferris by Marissa Meyer. Oh, yeah. Came out January 27. I've got my hands on a copy. Don't ask me when I'm going to read it. In amongst the review books.
Yep.
I've been a bit naughty and been reading like that. Your fault for giving me Finnegan of the Rock.
Oh, yeah.
But I then read three non-review books. So I'm, yes, I can blame you for being behind. Yeah, that's okay. That makes me feel quite good.
Yeah, you can blame me. I'll be happy though because I'm glad you enjoyed them so much.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, Ferris I think is going to be up there. And you have excitedly been approved for a book and I'm hoping I'm going to get approved.
I received in the mail, I was so excited, Court of Thorns and Roses, which
Sarah J. Maas,
I was so looking forward to this book and I was really happy to get a copy of it. So, but it's not out till May, so I don't know if I want to read it right away.
Oh, okay. Maybe we're going to joint review that one though, surely.
Yeah, yeah, we will.
All right, so maybe we'll have to hold off till April.
I'm not sure if I can, it looks really awesome. Oh. It came with like this little bookmark thing with a little
so jealous
mask thing on. Oh, I'll take a picture of it. It's really cute. Do you know what I found inside? There's a bookmark that has a Throne of Glass promo thing on it, and someone is on there, I can't remember who it was, but someone was quoted as saying that Kalena was up there with the likes of Frodo and who was the other? Oh, I've forgotten. Well, that's a bad story. I'll have to get it and read it next time.
Just, like, take a photo of it and put it in this podcast.
It just made me laugh because she's, like, nothing like Frodo.
No, I was going to say, where does this go? Because Frodo and...
Yeah, I can't remember who the other character was.
And I think it's Selena. I think we've already had this argument previously on a podcast about the pronunciation. Yes. Anyway, sorry.
I'm looking forward to reading.
You've got more. We're both planning on reading as well by next podcast, Monstrous by Mary Kate Connolly, which I think comes out on the 10th of February.
Yeah, we're going to jointly review that one.
Yeah, I think that's more middle grade.
Yes, I believe so. Yes. It looks a bit creepy from the cover.
I think it's got a Red Riding Hood vibe about it. I couldn't tell you. Look, I obviously read the synopsis before requesting it.
Yeah,
but
I did too.
I can't remember. But looking at the cover, it's got like this sort of a manga Red Riding Hood vibe about it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm interested.
Yeah, we'll see what that's... we'll talk about that one next time. I really want to reread Serafina before I read Shadowscale. Because I don't actually... I remember... It's been like 2 years, I think. And
I was going to say three. Wasn't it 2012?
I don't know. Anyway, a long time. I've written down on my list A Dance with Dragons because I really want to read it before the series starts again, and it's going to take me a while. I need to start.
You're brave.
But I've got so many other books on my list at the moment. It's like, do I want to take out a couple of weeks in order to read Dance with Dragons?
You can report back to us on how far through that you
are.
next podcast. I'm going to make a guess that you will still have it on your to-read file.
Yeah, probably. I'm a bit last minute with those sorts of things. I'll just leave it until it's like just about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else we wanted to mention?
Look, I was going to mention a couple of kids things, but I think we've gone so far over. Maybe I'll talk about it next.
Well, I was going to mention that... after last episode, and we were talking about the books that were going to come out this year, and we mentioned that Winds of Winter, which is the sixth book in the Song of Ice and Fire, was going to come out this year. It's actually not now going to come out this year.
I'm not surprised.
They've officially said, no, it's not coming.
And, I'm not surprised.
And there's been a load of stuff saying that the series, they have to keep going with the series, so... chances are that the series is going to end before the books are released.
Oh, so that's a bit sad.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to read the books in that case at some point.
I don't want to... In some ways it's good, it's fine, because some people read the series, some people read the books, but for people who want to do both, I think I'd rather read the books because if the way TV series are done... it's very simplified because they have to. Obviously, they have to simplify it. And if they do it simplified, that gives him limited scope in which to write the final books from. And I don't think it's allowing him to kind of...
It'll kill his creative spirit.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good way to go about it.
I think we discuss this in great detail. We'll have a Game of Thrones episode before the
after I've read Dance of Dragons.
Okay, well, you better read it before season five.
All right. Well, we better say that if you want to send us any feedback or suggestions for what we should talk about in future shows, or if you want to tell us about your Harry Potter addiction, you can email us at contact@teaintheTreetops.com, or you can tweet us at teatreetops.
Of course, you can also see our book reviews and other booky topics at the Tea in the Treetops blog, teaintheTreetops.com. Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time. Have a great Harry Potter book night.
See you later.
Bye.